Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 symptom support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, seeing things. 11 months into this pandemic, we know the symptoms of COVID pretty well. The common ones, coughing, fever. The ones that are a little more mysterious, loss of taste and smell, discolored toes. But there's a growing concern that COVID-19 has also caused a small number of people to develop serious, temporary, psychotic breaks.
Hallucinations, seeing things, hearing things that other people aren't, delusions, having a false fixed idea about something that could come in the form of like paranoia. So my name is Dr. Colin Smith. And I am a combined internal medicine psychiatry resident at Duke University Medical Center. Psychosis is a collection of signs and symptoms and is not a diagnosis in and of itself. There are a lot of things that cause psychosis, and many of those things are very temporary.
Last spring, Dr. Smith was part of a team treating a North Carolina woman who displayed typical mild COVID-19 symptoms, coughing and a runny nose. But she was also experiencing paranoid delusions, and they couldn't figure out why.
In this particular case, the paranoia dealt with thoughts, you know, that the patient was being tracked by cell phone specifically, felt like there were people out to get her, felt like her stimulus money was being stolen. Kind of the aggregation of all of those symptoms together led to concerning behavior that she herself kind of in retrospect realized that was like out of the norm for her.
So was it temporary? Did it extend a long period of time? You said she sort of, you know, thought back on it and realized it wasn't sort of who she, you know, typical behavior for her. So it seemed like at some point she realized that that wasn't something that was going to linger perhaps.
Yeah, I think temporary would be the appropriate term here. There are folks that develop symptoms of psychosis that last really chronically, like a lifetime or intermittently throughout a lifetime. And in this case, really, it was like a week's worth of significant symptoms that then resolved over time.
And so as you've begun to speak to colleagues and begun to sort of share information and data, I mean, how widespread is this problem?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a hard question to answer specifically with COVID. I think when we published this case report, it was published in August, but the case was really early on in the pandemic, maybe like the March timeframe. And there were, I think, two other cases that had come out right around that time period that were published in the literature out of, I think, New York City. And since that time, there have probably been 40 plus cases that have been reported in the literature. The challenge is that not every case of every illness is going to be written up as a case report or published in a scientific journal. That's a long-winded explanation to say that we don't really know at this time.
Well, and it seems like we may not know the answer to this question either, but I want to ask it. Are there any populations that might be more at risk than others?
Yeah, there are conditions which place people at risk for developing the symptoms of psychosis. Using certain substances, for example, can precipitate a psychotic episode, like cannabis, cocaine, stimulants, even things like steroids. So not just illicit substances, but medications that we give people to treat illness, and in certain cases, to treat symptoms of respiratory viruses. There are other people who have family history of psychotic disorder, so family history of schizophrenia or other severe persistent mental illness. So those people would also be at risk for developing psychosis or a psychotic disorder as well. And then there are groups that face like particular stressors. I would say that the entire world right now is in that position. with the pandemic. And so people that are facing extreme stress can develop temporary psychosis.
I mean, how do you differentiate by, you know, a psychosis that might be caused directly by the virus itself and those that might be caused by these sort of just high stress situations that we're all in?
Right. It's another great question and something that I think, you know, psychiatrists and physicians deal with a lot. When people present with a new onset of any psychiatric illness, the question is like, what's causing this thing? And so you have to use kind of contextual clues as to what the particular causes of in that particular situation. And so in the cases that we've seen in the literature, one of the biggest contextual clues is like the onset of symptoms. You know, so did someone develop psychotic symptoms before or after they developed symptoms from COVID-19 or any other particular illness? And that's one of the big things. You have to look at like the strength of the association in general. So not just in one case, but across multiple cases. You have to look at like the plausibility. Is it plausible that a virus, a respiratory virus, could cause a psychotic disorder or psychosis? And there are a number of different things that kind of come together. In the case that we're talking about, this was someone who didn't have any history of substance use, didn't have any family history of psychotic disorder, didn't have any personal history. So all of those things would theoretically point away from other causes. But again, I don't think you could say definitively whether someone had psychosis directly from the viral infection. So it's a good question. I don't think one that we will know in any particular individual case.
And just biologically, how can a virus cause psychosis?
Yeah, a number of different ways. So there is the potential for an indirect, right, this indirect cause, like a stress-mediated reaction. And in this case, it's not the virus directly causing a psychosis. The other potential pathways are more direct. So there is, you know, different viruses we know can infect the central nervous system, are found in cerebral spinal fluid. And so that would be one way that a virus would directly cause psychotic symptoms by infecting the brain. There are other kind of biologic pathways. Another one would be causing kind of a cytokine storm or an inflammatory response. So not a direct infection, but the infection leads to a downstream impact of inflammation. And that potentially could lead to psychosis. A third way would be more of like an autoimmune response. And that would be the body producing cells, which then attack the body's own organs.
And do we have any sense of sort of how biologically this coronavirus is making this happen?
I don't think we do. Like, I can't sit here and tell you that SARS-CoV-2 causes psychosis, right? That right now, all we know is that there are patients who present with psychosis, and those patients have COVID, right? So we have that association, and there are increasing reports of this in the literature. But at this point, we cannot like definitively say that.
But it does seem like, from at least in this case, and maybe some of the others that I've seen, that it is short term and they are resolving. Is there any concern, question, or is this one of those things we just don't know, that it could reemerge down the line?
Yeah, you're right in that of the cases that have been reported, the vast majority of those are resolving pretty quickly, within days to weeks. I think there's a case or two of symptoms extending out about 40 days. The other complicating factor is that there are people who are developing psychotic symptoms like hallucinations or delusions that we talked about before, but their course has also been complicated by a medical delirium. Delirium is more of like a confusion or like an acute brain failure, which generally happens in people who are pretty sick. And so those people can also have symptoms of psychosis. And so it kind of muddies the picture. Right now, I don't think we've seen anybody who has kind of developed a COVID-associated psychosis that's at least been reported that has then developed psychotic symptoms later. And to be honest, that would lead me to question whether that individual has a primary psychotic disorder, whether they just have schizophrenia or a schizoaffective disorder, and we didn't know that, or they just happened to be presenting with both at the same time.
Just backing up a little bit, I mean, obviously it's very new, and treatments in all different ways of having to do with COVID are difficult, and sort of they're figuring things out quickly. How has the treatment protocol sort of developed around this as you've sort of started to share with colleagues? Have you zeroed in on one thing you know that works, or a suite of things you know that work?
Yeah, anytime someone is presenting with psychosis, I think the real goal is to figure out some of the things you were asking before. Like, hey, what is causing their symptoms at this moment, and how can we treat that appropriately and safely? And we're pretty much using like standard antipsychotic medications or benzodiazepines, which are used in other forms of psychotic disorders or people that are presenting with agitation or significant distress. You know, firstly, if anyone has concerns either about themselves or about a family member and feels that they're in an acute danger to themselves or others, the most important thing to do would be to call 911 or to bring them to emergency room for evaluation. There are situations where people are kind of recognizing in themselves or someone else that they're having symptoms that are concerning. And if they have access to their primary care provider, a really close connection, are able to get an appointment, that may make sense. Or if they already see a mental health provider, that may be the best option to reach out to their provider early on. I think the most important thing that needs to be emphasized is really prevention, just like anything else. So if we want to prevent people from developing distressing psychological symptoms from COVID-19, we need to prevent COVID-19. And we need to do things like, wearing a mask, washing hands, watching our distance, and vaccinating when available.
Dr. Colin Smith is a combined internal medicine psychiatry resident at Duke University Medical Center. More in a moment.
There are things we're taught not to discuss in polite company, but by avoiding so-called impolite conversations, we're missing out on the chance to make important connections with each other. I'm Anita Rao, and I'm on a personal journey to uncover just what happens when we open ourselves up to talking about taboo topics that affect our bodies and our brains. Find out on Embodied, a new podcast about sex, relationships, and your health from North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
At this moment in time, a little more than 300,000 vaccine doses have been shipped to North Carolina, and about 100,000 people, mostly frontline healthcare workers, have had both doses. Our population sits at about 10.5 million people. That's a lot of arms in search of a shot. The plan to make that happen leaves unanswered questions. For example, in Phase 1B, among those eligible to get vaccinated are educators. The CDC defines that group as those who, quote, work in the education sector, teachers and support staff members, as well as childcare workers, unquote. Does that include university faculty? That's unclear. What's a little more clear is that in Phase 1B, anyone 75 years or older, regardless of health status or living situation, can get the vaccine, if it's available. And it is starting this week in some counties in North Carolina, like Davidson, where Lillian Kuntz is the health director.
When we put the message out on Saturday that we would be opening up this way, it sort of allowed for people to get in a ready, set, go mindset, which led to first available appointment, I'm grabbing it.
The state just announced two efforts to get available vaccines to people. First, starting Wednesday, DHHS will open a toll-free hotline for people to get information about how, when, and where they can get vaccinated against coronavirus. And second, the governor has mobilized the National Guard to speed up the rollout. But even with these efforts, vaccine supplies will be limited for several months. And because of a lack of federal involvement, the process will likely be scattershot and confusing, all while more and more people fill hospital beds. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Our producers are Rebecca Martinez and Charlie Shelton Ormond. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.